This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
An anti-corruption protest turned violent Thursday in Nairobi, with police caught on video beating at least one journalist and one protester, and others alleging they too were attacked.
That's VOA East Africa correspondent Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, there are growing calls for South African President Jacob Zuma to resign following the release of a report alleging corruption in his administration. In a surprise move, Egypt devalued its currency by 48% today as the government unveils an economic austerity program. And new allegations about ties between the DRC's Electoral Commission. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, an anti-corruption protest turned violent today in Nairobi, with police caught on video beating at least one journalist and one protester, and others alleging they too were attacked. Jill Craig reports from Nairobi.
Carrying signs with messages like "Fight corruption, not activists," and wearing T-shirts saying "Act on corruption now or resign," hundreds of protesters gathered in Nairobi's Uhuru Park to voice their anger at what they say are increasing levels of corruption in President Uhuru Kenyatta's government. Early in the demonstration, police began firing tear gas to disperse protesters. VOA cameraman Amos Wangwa filmed freelance journalist Derek Davis being beaten by police officers with batons.
At some point, they started caning me while others ran. It is your cameraman who saved me by saying he's a genuine journalist, by holding my tag and even quoted my union number. That is when the police officer stopped caning me.
VOA video also shows a protester being beaten, and others allege they were similarly attacked by police. The protests were sparked by an alleged scandal at the Ministry of Health, where some $300 million in funds were said to have been misappropriated. Protest organizer and civil rights activist Boniface Mwangi says enough is enough.
The reason why we're fighting corruption is because it's our responsibility as citizens, responsible citizens, to fight corruption. We have no other option. We have to do it ourselves. The government is unable to do it. The policies are there. The laws are there. The police are there. He just doesn't know how to do his job.
Deputy police spokesperson Jared Ojuok told VOA he could not make a statement on the beatings at this time. On Transparency International's Corruption Index, Kenya ranks 139th out of 168 countries, making it one of the countries where public perception of corruption is highest. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party has warned its members to avoid corruption and abuse of state power. The party was reacting to a report from the nation's anti-corruption chief that suggested President Jacob Zuma allowed a powerful family to choose cabinet ministers. As Thuso Kamalo reports from Johannesburg, the main opposition party is now pushing for a motion of no confidence against the president.
In a statement Thursday, the ANC said it welcomes what is known as the State Capture Report. The party said the report gives it a basis to discuss the allegations of corruption, but fell short of saying that action will be taken against President Zuma and others who are implicated. In the report, former public protector Tuluma Donsela details accounts of a number of current and former government officials who were approached by the wealthy Gupta family to either take cabinet posts or make decisions that favor their business interests. The party has threatened to closely examine the lifestyles of its officials to expose those who amass wealth through corrupt means. Meanwhile, some party veterans have reacted angrily to Zuma's conduct as alleged in the report. Cheryl Carolus is one of them.
Our country is burning and the African National Congress is missing in action. We are appalled that the blatant looting of public assets is being openly facilitated by those close to us and those whom we see as our leaders.
Opposition parties that went to court to stop Zuma from blocking the release of the report say they are considering various actions against the president. The main opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, DA, says it will press criminal charges against Zuma and others implicated in the report. Mabine Seyabe, the spokesperson for the DA leader Musi Maimane, says the party will also ask parliament to act.
We've set in motion of no confidence, and hopefully we'll get this motion of no confidence will be debated. And all those ANC members that have made noise about President Jacob Zuma's dishonorable conduct will hopefully vote with that motion of no confidence.
Judith February, an analyst on governance issues at the Institute of Security Studies in South Africa, says that under the circumstances, Zuma should voluntarily step down.
We see a picture which is, you know, not constitutional. It's undermining of the rule of law, and it is where the state which is going rogue with the president who's going rogue.
Tuesday's report called for the creation of an inquiry board that will investigate all the allegations and reveal its findings within 180 days. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The International Organization for Migration reports that at least 240 migrants, most of them coming from West Africa, have died or gone missing in two shipwrecks off the coast of Libya. IOM says there are 29 survivors, including women, children, and several babies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration says most of the migrants already had died by the time rescuers arrived. IOM spokesman Itai Viriri tells VOA about 12 bodies have been fished out of the sea and more are likely to be recovered as the rescue effort continues.
It is a really, really big worry because we are seeing these unprecedented numbers of people dying when normally around this time of year, whilst there have been tragedies like this, we've never really experienced the numbers that we're seeing now. The fact that we are already talking of over 4,200 dead, when the whole of last year we're talking of 3,700, is of huge concern.
Viriri says smugglers are apparently persuading the migrants to make the treacherous journey by telling them Europe is going to turn over the rescue mission to the Libyan and Tunisian coast guards, and now might be their last chance to leave North Africa.
The smugglers are certainly using that as a ploy to make sure that people who normally would not consider getting onto boats at this time of year, when the seas are really, really choppy and rough, that they reconsider, you know, because as the smugglers are telling them, they won't get that opportunity in the near future when, first of all, the Libyan and Tunisian coast guards clamp down on boats being launched off their shores.
Viriri says another big worry is that smugglers are piling the migrants into rubber dinghies. He says these flimsy craft are not suitable for the Mediterranean at any time of year, but they are especially dangerous now in the choppy winter seas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In a surprise move, Egypt devalued its currency by 48% today as the government unveils an economic austerity program. The move comes 1 week after International Monetary Fund Chief Christine Lagarde said Egypt faced a currency crisis and should devalue the pound. Floating the pound is part of efforts to attract a $12 billion loan from the IMF. It's also aimed at crippling the large underground market in U.S. dollars. The dollar was trading at a historic high of 18 pounds on the black market before the devaluation. Egypt's central bank says a liberalized exchange rate will help create an environment for a reliable and sustainable supply of foreign currency. After the announcement, the dollar was trading at about 14 Egyptian pounds on official markets, up from nearly 9 pounds. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. An anti-corruption protest turned violent today in Nairobi, with police caught on video beating at least one journalist and one protester, and others alleging they too were attacked. There are growing calls for South African President Jacob Zuma to resign following the release of a report alleging corruption in his administration. And in a surprise move, Egypt has devalued its currency by 48% today as the government unveils an economic austerity program. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A public opinion survey has been taken in 9 Arab countries on how the U.S. elections may affect the Middle East. The Arab Center in Washington conducted the survey in cooperation with the Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies based in Doha, Qatar. Khalil Jashan is director of the Arab Center. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the survey results.
Surprisingly, a majority of Arabs in the 9 countries that we polled feel that there will be some impact. Sometimes the impact in their judgment is negative, sometimes it's positive. They tended to be a little bit more positive, of course, with Clinton as a president versus Trump as president. And the discrepancy between the two was pretty high. But in general, probably the largest percentage of Arab citizens would prefer for the U.S. to kind of stay out of their countries. That is the number one preference. In terms of specific issues, they would like, for example, to see the U.S. more involved in a positive way to find a political solution in Syria to the benefit of the Syrian people. They would like to see more emphasis on trying to find a political solution to the Palestine problem. But generally speaking, the preference is for the U.S. to stay out of Arab affairs.
Did the survey results reflect a major difference in opinions in North African Arab countries compared to Egypt, Iraq, Jordan, Kuwait, and Palestine, and Saudi Arabia?
Yes, it did. For example, in terms of positive attitude vis-a-vis the United States in general, the results show that there is higher positive results in North Africa, particularly in Tunisia and in Morocco, than in Egypt. Egypt tended to basically line up with Palestine as the two most critical populations with regards to U.S. policy, particularly in the region, when you get specific. Of course, again, this survey proved that Arab people tend to distinguish significantly or seriously between the U.S. and the American people on the one hand, and U.S. foreign policy on the other. When the questions got into detail with regards to U.S. foreign policy, you could see more negative response from your average Arab with regards to that.
Do U.S. elections matter to Arabs, or they believe U.S. policy is not changing regardless who will be the next president?
There is a sector, they may be up to 1/3 in some countries of people polled that did give that response, that it doesn't make a difference whether it's Trump or Clinton, that U.S. policy will continue the way it is and will not bring about any positive change. But I think surprisingly, a growing number of Arabs tend to see the positive side, and they think that there will be some changes, some impact, not only globally, but also in the Middle East in general, in the Arab world in particular. And although the numbers are a little bit lower, but they also see some impact on their own individual countries.
Why do Arab citizens show a preference for Clinton versus Trump?
I think Arabs have listened carefully, as this survey shows. When you ask, have you been following American elections? Surprisingly, a very large number of Arabs have been following because of course, the media revolution in the Arab world, the satellite network. Almost 60% of Arabs say they follow basically the satellite stations in their coverage of U.S. elections, and about 30% more follow internet sites. So between the two of them, you're talking about a very large sector in Arab society following the details of the elections. In terms of preference, definitely they see Hillary as a more conventional president in the United States. There might be some change. There might be the same policies pursued, but at least it's predictable for them. With Trump, I think what they have heard thus far is somewhat negative, banning Muslims from entering the country, some antagonistic statements about taking over Arab oil, stuff in conventional political circles. So they seem to be reflecting that in their opinion vis-a-vis the two candidates.
Khalil Jazhan is director of the Arab Center in Washington, D.C. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi. Well, type 2 diabetes is one of the fastest growing non-communicable diseases in the world. It causes abnormally high blood sugar levels, which can lead to heart disease, amputations, vision loss, nerve pain, and much more. But lifestyle changes, such as exercise and a better diet, can have dramatic positive effects. Mexico is trying to improve the diets of its citizens by imposing a tax on beverages sweetened with sugar. A new study says the tax could help sharply reduce the number of cases and deaths from diabetes and cardiovascular disease. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Mexican government imposed a 10% excise tax on sugary beverages in 2014. It's an attempt to encourage people to choose healthier alternatives due to the country's growing obesity and diabetes epidemic. University of California, San Francisco professor Kirsten Bibbins Domingo led a study on the potential health benefits of the tax. She says it's already had a big impact.
Purchases of sugary beverages have dropped in Mexico, a 12% drop.
Studies have shown that reducing the intake of sweetened drinks can improve health, especially when it comes to diabetes. Bibbins Domingo says she expects that to happen in Mexico.
There are about 200,000 cases of diabetes that we would anticipate over the next 10 years that will not occur if this level of reduction in consumption continues over time that we attribute to the tax. And that's a major health benefit that's also associated with a major cost saving. About $1 billion U.S. dollars is likely to be saved in terms of reduced health care expenditures.
But imposing a tax, whether in Mexico or the United States, is often not very popular.
So there's definitely been opposition to taxes. People usually are not fond of taxes, and certainly the American Beverage Association has fought taxes. But it's important to note that the World Health Organization just a few weeks ago came out with a report that said that the experience with places that have adopted these taxes suggests that these are very important tools to help us to fight the rising tide of diabetes worldwide.
Efforts to pass the so-called soda tax have had mixed results in various U.S. cities. Critics, especially the beverage industry, say it could hurt local economies. Bibbins Domingo warns type 2 diabetes is not just a Mexican or a U.S. problem.
The diabetes problem is a worldwide problem. Rates of diabetes have risen in almost every country across the globe. Mexico has a particularly compelling problem with diabetes. It has amongst the highest rates of diabetes in the Americas, and it also has amongst the highest rates of sugary beverage consumption worldwide.
In the U.S., it used to be that one in 11 teenagers had a condition called prediabetes. Now, it's one in five.
That has to do, of course, with individual behaviors, but also has to do with the environment, the food environment that we live in, which is a highly processed, high sugar diet. It is something that we as a society are responsible for, that this is a highly preventable condition.
More countries around the world are adopting a Western-style diet that's often rich in sugar, fat, and salt. The World Health Organization says that's contributing to the rise in non-communicable diseases, along with a lack of exercise, tobacco use, and alcohol abuse. These diseases include diabetes, cancer, stroke, and respiratory disease. They kill 38 million people a year. Type 1 diabetes, formerly known as juvenile diabetes, occurs when the pancreas produces little or no insulin to control glucose, a sugar that's a main energy source. The exact cause is not known. Treatment includes taking daily doses of insulin. In the United States, November is Diabetes Awareness Month. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
For nearly 20 years, an opioid addiction has been spreading in the United States to the point where it's now an epidemic fueled by legal and illegal drugs. Prescription painkillers containing narcotics or opioids have led to thousands of overdose deaths and hospitalizations. But until now, researchers haven't studied how this epidemic affects the youngest members of society. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
Vicodin and OxyContin are the brand names of hydrocodone and oxycodone, powerful painkillers that are contributing to widespread drug addiction, especially in the U.S. These drugs and others contain opioids or narcotics. And while doctors often prescribe opioids to help control chronic pain, they can be abused. Julie Gaither, an epidemiologist at the Yale School of Medicine, is concerned about the huge increase in the sale of opioids in the U.S. in the past 20 years.
The opioid epidemic has grown exponentially. It really began in the mid-1990s when physicians were encouraged to do a better job of treating chronic pain. In 2014, there were approximately 19,000 deaths that were attributed to opioid medications.
Prince was an international music star. His death in June was found to be the result of an accidental overdose of an opioid drug. The Centers for Disease Control says in the U.S., 48 people die every day from opioid overdoses. A new study shows that more than 13,000 children and teenagers were hospitalized for opioid poisonings over a 16-year period. Gaither and Dr. Deepa Kamenga, also from the Yale School of Medicine, decided to look at hospital discharge records of children and adolescents to find out how many had been hospitalized in recent years for prescription opioid poisonings.
We found that the rates of hospitalizations for opioid poisonings doubled during 1997 to 2012. We also found that the highest number of hospitalizations were among teenagers, ages 15 through 19. The highest rates of increase in hospitalizations were among our youngest population, which was 1 to 4-year-old children.
Kamenga says the way these drugs are prescribed, disposed of, and packaged needs to change. Accidental ingestion by infants is especially troubling.
Our national conversation has focused on how to improve the treatment and prevention of opioid misuse and abuse. But we also hope that this conversation focuses on how to safeguard children from this epidemic.
The study was published in JAMA Pediatrics. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
On November 8th, American citizens will exercise their right to vote and choose their next president. VOA is providing comprehensive coverage of this unique democratic process. Who is going to earn the trust of the American people to lead the nation for the next 4 years? Find out right here on VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.